In a world filled with war, hate, suffering, and Justin Bieber, two guys fix it all with a battle about a movie. One film, two opinions, one coin, two sides. They feud. You decide. It's time for Film Feud.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Film Feud, the podcast where we debate whether top-rated movies should be top-rated. I'm Vidur.
And I'm Vikram.
Hi, Vikram.
Hey, man.
Are you doing Korg from Thor 3?
Korg was doing me.
Oh.
Thor 3? Oh, yeah, Thor 3.
Why don't you try to sustain that voice and tell the good folk, our pleasant listeners, what we're doing here today?
We take a movie from the IMDb Top 250, we toss a coin, heads argues for, and tails argues against.
Simple enough. And the movie we're going to be feuding today is definitely top-rated IMDb Top 250, soon-to-be cult classic.
Definitely, huh?
That's not opinion. That's just a fact, you know? That's just, I'm reporting straight news here.
Okay.
It's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I'm excited about this one.
I'm excited because I've only seen this movie once, and I'm excited to reevaluate my opinions, you know? Just check it out again.
Well said, Mr. Diplomat. Good job at hiding your feelings before the coin toss.
Well, that's what we have to do here, you know? What if the coin doesn't match my sensibilities for the first time ever?
Right.
It never usually happens, but a man can be prepared.
All right. Why don't we just save you some trouble and jump to this coin toss?
Wait, you're not going to reveal any of your emotions?
Nope.
Oh my God, that's so unfair. Fine, let's get to it. I'll be tossing the coin, and heads means I argue for the movie, and tails means I argue against.
Okay.
And it's tails. Well,
you're so screwed.
I want to first give some context here. I saw this movie in 4DX.
Okay.
And I think that's the best representation of what this movie can be. To watch a Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse in 4DX.
Okay, stop. Wait.
And
you've only seen it in 4DX.
It literally broke my back because of the 4DX chairs moving.
Yes.
But also how bad it was.
No. How bad this movie is or is not cannot break your back.
Okay, wait. I'm going to pause. I'm going to change my strategy here.
Okay, please do, man.
I don't want to say anything. I would like to rewatch the movie
unbiasedly
and then present my opinions in a fair manner.
Yeah, sure. I'm just very happy that I'm for this movie. I loved this movie when it came out. I think it's one of the best animated movies ever made. I think it's one of the best Spider-Man movies ever made.
Yeah, couldn't have revealed this earlier, huh? Too scared.
Oh, I just didn't want to go through what you're going through right now at this very point. Were you trying to blame 4DX moving chairs as to why this movie sucked? I'm so happy.
I've retracted that. I'm going to change my strategy. I'm going to watch this movie with a clear set of eyes. Mm-hmm. I am happy to concede the things that are good, and I will fairly point out the things that are bad, and we'll just go from there.
Can we stop this torture?
I just want to go watch the movie.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go watch the movie.
Yet another tedious origin story. When will these Spider-Man creators learn? Sony, stop making Spider-Man origin stories.
This was the best Spider-Man origin story because it didn't have the stupid Uncle Ben. That's the part of the...
It had Uncle Prowler.
No, but it didn't...
It had Black Uncle Ben.
Firstly, that was one of the best parts about the movie.
It had Uncle Black Ben.
I'm not gonna respond to that. I'm just gonna keep moving on. The most annoying part about these Spider-Man Batman origin movies were Bruce Wayne's parents dying and Uncle Ben dying with great power, great responsibility, all that stuff. None of that, man. What are you talking about? This is such a great origin story.
Spider-Man 1, great power, great responsibility, did it amazing. Spider-Man 1 did the origin story of Spider-Man better.
What part of it?
The great power, great responsibility, emotional stakes, when he fights Macho Man. All that stuff is so much more exciting than this, like, convoluted plot at the end of the day. You know, the whole power discovery thing, Shazam did it better. Chronicle did it better.
With it.
Spider-Man, the animated series, did it better.
You know, in the intro, you took this different approach to, like, change your strategy midway because you realized, like, your existing strategy was bullshit. I think you should do that right now.
I'm all in on the strategy.
Are you coming out of the gate with this point?
I watched this movie again.
Uh-huh.
And I realized, like, the visual attack that this movie is when you watch it in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And the 4DX element of it notwithstanding. That just shrouds all the narrative weaknesses that this movie has. And the high school kiddie nonsense. At the end of the day, it's an animated movie. They can't risk alienating the kids. So they make it for kids. So it's cool. It's a great kids movie. Stop pretending it's an IMDb Top 250 movie.
Well, just because it's an animated movie, you're saying that it's made for kids. It's a Spider-Man movie. It's made for kids. Yeah, sure, it is. But every Spider-Man movie falls under that TG. That being said, I love this movie and I'm not a big fan of animated movies in general. I don't like the Toy Stories and the general kids Pixar movies.
Just because you have no heart.
Wait, so are you arguing for animated movies or against animated
movies? This movie's animated, has no heart, and it's a kids movie and we adults need to stop splooshing over it.
It's the best animated movie I've ever seen in my life. And for a reason, we'll dive into why the animation is so good. But that's not even the best part about the movie. Everything coming together, the whole package is the best part. The music, the score, the voiceover acting, the characters, everything is amazing.
Listen, I think it could have been amazing if it didn't suffer from the baggage. Some of the stuff just weighed it down. High school kiddie drama. Oh, I'm going to go to school and my dad's going to embarrass me. Because he's going to say, I love you in front of a lot of people.
First 2 minutes of the movie.
It's just so contrived. It's so contrived. Okay. Yeah, the character establishment is done in your face, like on the nose for kids. You know, the second is like, oh, he walks in late to class and he's like, oh, Einstein relative. Maybe I'm not late. You're all early. And then Gwen Stacy actually laughs. I mean, listen, I know it's nitpicky. I don't want to get into it. But I think together, all these nitpicks, they tell you that it's just so ham-fisted.
I would love to see any of these nitpicks come after the first 5 minutes of the movie because you're literally talking about that. So why don't we just jump into something that's more wholesome?
Okay.
Why don't we talk about the animation?
Okay.
Okay. It took a year. I know you're going to shit all over this point as soon as I deliver it. But I just want to put it out there for our listeners. It took a year of these two animators to create a 10-second footage that like depicted what the director or the creators had in their head.
I've heard this piece of trivia before.
Uh-huh.
Well, they should get more efficient then. Okay. They shouldn't suck at their jobs.
So how are they sucking at their job? They created something that was never created before, that was never visualized before, and they nailed it. They absolutely nailed it.
They should have stuck to that style of animation. Why were there like 10 different styles? It was so confusing. Stick to one style. I don't want to watch 10 movies.
It is predominantly one style, except for when the different Spider-Man come. And that's the only time where the animation sort of caters to their timeline or their characters.
Also when he's like walking the streets, it's like photorealistic streets and he's a cartoon. It's like I'm watching Space Jam. Jesus.
What? Have you seen Space Jam?
Have you seen Spider-Verse?
Yes, I have. We talked about it.
It's the same.
Spider-Verse and Space Jam are the same.
At one point when Spider-Ham comes, and I'm sure we'll talk about it.
I can't believe this. Sorry.
When Spider-Ham is in the movie, it was exactly like Space Jam. And when he's walking the streets and it's all photorealistic.
Where's Michael Jordan? Where's the real dude in that animated world?
I'm not even Michael Jordan. We're talking about the animation style here. I'm just saying, like, yes, it's inventive because I haven't seen it before, but something new doesn't need to be good. The style, I mean, I don't watch anime, but it's probably like ripping off from 10 different places and just jamming it all together.
Okay,
Stick to one.
Dude, shut up, okay? Let me just give you a refresher on Space Jam firstly. It's Michael Jordan inserted in a Looney Tunes world. There's nothing photorealistic about it. It's nowhere close to into the Spider-Verse. I can't believe you're comparing these two.
No, in the final match, they make it look like very realistic. Just like in Spider-Verse, they make the streets look very realistic. And they keep switching. At one point, it's realistic. At one point, it's not. At one point, Doc Ock is a woman and arms are going crazy. And then when they're swinging, when he's being taught about the swinging.
Right.
Yeah, then it completely doesn't look like a realistic environment. But when he's in his home, it does. So, listen, I get it. They wanted to mimic a comic book. They should have mimicked one. They did not need to mimic 90 comic books and just shove it all in there because they didn't know whether they'd get a chance to do it again.
Actually, don't agree with you at all, man. Apart from when the different Spider-Men or women in this case come from the different dimensions. Apart from that, when it's Miles Morales and even Jake Johnson's character for that matter, the animation is pretty consistent. In fact, there's this one video by these YouTubers. I forget who they are. I saw it. And they said that, in fact, I saw this very interesting video by Corridor Crew where they explained that whenever Jake Johnson's character was animated, he was animated at 24 frames per second. But whenever Miles Morales' character was animated, he was animated at 12. To just give this like slight jittery feel to Miles Morales' character because he was a new Spider-Man. He wasn't used to the movement and stuff like that. And I think when I rewatched this movie with that in mind and I saw it, it actually stuck with me because the animation and the effort these guys made with the animation, it's so well deserving of the Oscar they got.
Yeah, well, it threw me off, the fact that he was jittery. Keep it consistent.
No, and then as he became better at Spider-Man, they started animating his character 24 frames a second as well. So you see that difference of when he's accepting that he's Spider-Man, when he wears his black suit, and it's so...
That's a gimmick. That's what I mean. This is one of probably 10 things you could tell me about the animation. Like, for instance, I know those Bend-Aid dots, they actually add this, like, look to the movie that, has never been done before, makes it look like a comic. But to me, it was too much. It was a visual overload that was just completely unnecessary. You want to do all these gimmicks, you know, just save it for student films. I don't want to watch a $100 million student film. I'll tell you an animated movie that just took me by surprise that I loved. Obviously, like, the Pixar ones and all those are fine. But I watched Kubo and the Two Strings. Kubo and the Two Strings had this amazing visual flair. It was, I think, made to look like claymation, stop motion. I don't even know the right terms. It was like hand-drawn but computer-animated. It looked mind-boggling. And then when the vibe is kept consistent, it actually draws me into that universe. Here, it's almost like you're watching an animated movie, but the suspension of disbelief is made impossible because the animation style keeps changing. And it's also like thwack and pow and, you know, like 1960s Batman / like comic book sound effects coming. I didn't enjoy that at all.
Are you serious? That's the whole point of why we fell in love with comic books and comic book movies. It's the whole suspension of disbelief and how someone who's been bitten by a radioactive spider and has spider powers can exist in a world close to our world.
It's a fine line, my friend. The suspension of disbelief is very, very, very tough to pull off. In a movie, because it's like live action characters, we're sort of forced to suspend our disbelief. But to get invested in an animated world, I just think like...
So you don't like any comic book animated movies or cartoons?
I love comic book animated movies. This was a misfire.
This was the one that was the most close to reality in terms of how you can recreate a comic book into an animated movie. And you're saying this one was a misfire?
You know what this is? This is the Guy Ritchie / Edgar Wright version of a comic book movie. Like, just go crazy with your editing and your visuals and your animation and, like, one character is massive, like Wilson Fisk, and another character is, like, life-size. Just throw everything against the wall and plebs like you think it's stuck.
Plebs like me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, dude, I'm getting really tilted. We might have a fist fight after this
feud.
Yes,
mission accomplished.
You know, you mentioned Wilson Fisk. You know who voiced Wilson Fisk?
Who?
Lee S. Schreiber?
Okay.
I did not believe that. When I saw the movie and I saw the credits after that, I could not believe it.
What's so great about Lee F. Schreiber? I mean, he's great. I like Spotlight.
He's okay. I've never been a big fan, but I could not imagine that voice being his.
Is that a plus point for you somehow?
Of course it is.
Do you know who voices Rocket Raccoon?
Yeah, I do.
Can you believe that that's Bradley Cooper?
No, isn't it a great job that he does? That's the whole point. Voiceover acting is also a very tough thing to do. And then whenever you can make your voice sound completely not like your original voice, I think that's amazing.
Yeah, it's so easy to make your voice not sound like your original voice. You just cover your
phone. Please go for it.
You just cover the phone.
Please go for it.
You just cover the phone with the hand. Okay.
You're on a mic right now. That's exactly what they're doing.
So I think Lee F. Schreiber kind of sucked as Wilson Fisk. And I don't think it's a big deal to make your voice sound different because I'm doing it right now.
Morty from Rick and Morty?
And I'm not really like paid millions of dollars and I can still pull this off. So, you know, I don't think like I get it. What's the big deal?
That was horrible, dude.
It did change.
Just a friend advice. It was really bad.
It did change in the middle, I have to say.
It was all over the place. I think you're shooting for Morty from Rick and Morty there.
No. Well, he does it. What's the big deal? He changes to voice.
It is a big deal.
Seth MacFarlane does it.
It's a big deal. These guys are very talented. And you should give, like, respect where respect's due. And that's why, like, Liev Schreiber voicing Wilson Fisk.
It's just stunt casting. It's not like he had the best voice for it.
Stunt casting.
Yeah, you don't know that term? That's what this entire movie is, stunt casting.
No, it doesn't apply to Liev Schreiber.
All the big names in this movie are basically stunt casting. You really think they're the best voice actors available? It's the same reason Lion King is played by Donald Glover and James Earl Jones, etc.
No, Donald Glover and James Earl Jones both have fantastic voices. That's why they're voicing them. And they can, like, Donald Glover can sing so well. What are you talking about, dude? Like, you're all over the place. You have no idea how to, like...
No, you want to talk about Wilson Fisk? Or you want to talk about the casting?
Yeah.
Okay, we can talk about the cast. Firstly, I think Chris Pine sucked.
Chris Pine was barely there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean in the movie?
Yeah.
I mean as an acting talent.
Well, he was part of the Star Trek Resurrection thing, so I'm happy about that. But beyond that, I don't care about Chris Pine.
He was part of what?
Star Trek being resurrected.
Oh, J.J. Abrams?
Yeah.
No, I'm not talking about Chris Pine in general. I love Chris Pine.
Oh, you love Chris Pine?
Yeah, I think in Hell or High Water, he's amazing. No, I think he sucked in this movie.
Well, like, he was there for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, but it completely ruined like Miles' universe as Spider-Man for me. He just made out to be a weirdo weak link. Why did he even die? Like, worst death ever. But I think they wanted to contrast Jake Johnson to him so much that he ended up not being a talent. So to me, he was the biggest name in the movie. And he really let me down in terms of voice acting. Everybody else, sure. Jake Johnson, we all like Jake Johnson, dude. I mean, you can recognize his voice and then you just kind of like him. But he was okay. And the main kid, Miles, who was he played by?
This kid called Shamik Moore.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean...
I think he was spot on. Miles was spot on. And I was really glad they didn't go for like a big ticket actor for Miles' character here. But everyone else, man. And not even like Jake Johnson. Jake Johnson's pretty good. I think the Spider-Man or the version of Spider-Man that he was voicing was pretty spot on with his voice. I think just like his whole attitude and stuff like that gelled. But it was the sidey guys, man. It was Mahershala Ali, like as his Uncle Prowler.
Mahershala Ali,
Uncle Prowler.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Uncle Black Ben.
Yeah,
Mahershala Ali is good in everything. So okay, I mean he had a minor role. I'll tell you what I'll grant you, and I'll tell you the thing that you have to grant me. It's gonna be Nick Cage, yeah. Obviously Nick Cage. It was more the surprise of Nick Cage showing up yeah. and then the attitude that he sustained.
Yeah, like completely sustained to the T.
Do you have a Nick Cage?
No, I don't actually.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah. I wish I could.
That's not Nick Cage. No,
no, it's not.
No. It's not. He does that once every
As
movie.
A friend to a friend. That's not a Nick Cage. The best I could do.
I want to take his face off.
Yeah, I can't do a Nick Cage. But I'll tell you what you have to concede to me.
Mm-hmm.
John Mulaney sucks.
You know what? When Spider-Man...
Yes, okay, I see it okay. coming.
It's not a concession because even the first time when I saw this movie and Spider-Ham popped up, for like the first 30 seconds, I was like, WTF, dude. Like, what is happening here?
Yes,
like,
yes.
This is going over the rails.
Yes.
But it kind of came together pretty well.
No, no. Yeah. And when Spider-Man, Spider-Girl anime
Penny
2099
Parker.
Penny Parker showed up, it went further off the rails. And I'm like, guys... You made a mistake here. That's what I was thinking. Like, when I saw it in theaters, like I said, visual overload. I'm like, okay, give me some animation. Give me some Looney Tunes animation. Give me some Spider-Man Noir animation. Sure, I'll take all of it. My chair is moving. But now when I saw it in peace, I was like, this is a mistake. This is a mistake to go overboard here. It doesn't make any sense.
Why? Of course it does. Like, the whole movie was about multiverse Spider-Man. Like, of course it does.
And pretty dumb premise, by the way.
Pretty dumb premise.
Wait, let's not stray. I have so many bad things to say. We're straying.
Unnecessarily.
John Mulaney sucked.
I don't think he sucked. I think he did a pretty good job as Spider-Ham. Are you trying to argue that Spider-Ham's character in this movie sucked or John Mulaney as Spider-Ham sucked? Because they're two different things.
John Mulaney's voice acting, he's the one who changed his voice the least. Right? So it's like, Nick Cage.
No. Yeah,
except Nick Cage. And so suddenly he was like super recognizable. I don't like his voice in general.
Wait. Sorry. Just another rebuttal to that. No one changed their voice except for Liev Schreiber.
Ah, Jake Johnson, yeah.
No, Jake Johnson was exactly how his voice is. Miles Morales' parents, Michael Tyree
okay,
Henry,
fine.
They were all exactly how they are.
It suited the character, right? But John Mulaney, I don't like the way he talks in general.
So
like
that's, it's
long,
a personal prejudice.
It's
here.
Not a personal
yeah,
prejudice.
You just don't like John Mulaney.
It didn't fit well with Spider-Ham. Like, John Mulaney talking in general during stand-up sets, his, like, weird, old-school confidence and these long-drawn-out, perfectly constructed sentences, fine. As Spider-Ham, that doesn't make any sense. He needs to be more, like, Like
Looney Tunes.
Yeah, everybody, that's all folks. Yeah,
that's exactly what he did.
No, he
didn't. Don't like John Mulaney.
He was oh, hello. He's literally doing his Broadway show. Oh, hello. I am Spider Ham. Like, that's how he talks.
That's not how he talks.
Can we move on from the casting?
Please, you're obsessing over your hate, personal hate on John Mulaney, and you try to project that to Spider Ham. I don't like it. I don't like it. Let's move on.
Okay. Let's move on to what we were just talking about. The premise of the movie, like multiverse, Spider-Verse. How convenient is this? The Spider-Men keep going across multiverses and that's it? Like, what is going on?
They all converge to Miles Morales's.
Yeah, why? Like, they don't explain it at all.
They do. Wilson Fisk was trying to run that experiment and
But why Spider-Man? Why only Spider-Man goes across universes? Oh, and Wilson Fisk's experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Midway through the movie, we realize that the Spider-Men and Gwen Stacy, they're glitching because they'll slowly deatomize. What was it? I stopped even paying attention.
Basically, they needed to return to their reality or their timeline.
Yeah. Now, reconcile that with Wilson Fisk's plan. What does he want to do? He wants to get his
plan
wife.
Doesn't make sense. Yeah. It's just driven by, like, pure love and passion, and he just wants a version of his wife and kids with him.
He's going to go to a parallel universe.
Yeah.
He's going to kill his own Wilson Fisk, because otherwise that guy would be out for revenge and create his own particle accelerator.
Possibly. They don't touch upon that, but they're basically going to pull a version of his family to his timeline.
Then he's going to get his family into his own timeline, make them accept who he is.
It's Wilson Fisk. He's demented. Obviously, there's no...
slowly watch his family die from cellular decay.
Yep.
Movie over.
Yep.
All Spider-Man, these smart Spider-Men, all they need to do is be like, hey, Wilson.
Oh, they need to talk to him?
They need to talk to him.
Talk to the big bad guy. Hey, bro, let's listen, sit down. I need to explain something. Boom, I shoot you, you're dead.
Kingpin.
That's not how it works.
Let me tell you a little something.
You're talking something that's fundamentally flawed. Like, you can't talk to Kingpin and try to explain that. Listen, bro, your plan's not gonna work out, buddy.
Why not?
Buddy, it's not gonna work out, but why not?
Hey, Wilson, let me learn you a little something, bro.
Okay.
Sell it to decay, bro.
Did you go to London in the middle?
I was trying to do Jake Johnson.
He doesn't say bruv. No one in America says bruv. But that plan's not going to work out, sadly.
Okay.
And if you don't understand why, you don't understand Wilson Fisk or comic books in general, I would say.
I understand both. I like Wilson Fisk in the Daredevil Netflix series.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he was a little demented, but his plans weren't stupid AF.
Because that's the version of Wilson Fisk in that particular thing.
Also, he had human proportions.
Well, he's still pretty big, man. If you think about it.
I mean, Michael Clarke Duncan, who's like the biggest person to ever be in a movie, even he had human proportions.
It's a comic. What are you arguing against? I don't get it.
This Kingpin looks. Have you seen Master of Disguise with Dana Carvey? And he dresses up as a turtle. Like, he just has this giant, like, body and a little head that keeps coming out. That's what this Wilson Fisk looks like.
Yeah.
It's like lazy design, because it's like probably the easiest. You don't need any, like, contours.
Even though I'm not that big a fan of or haven't read so many comics, I've seen a Wilson Fisk like that in the Spider-Man or the Daredevil comics. Of those proportions. So it's not like this was an original Wilson Fisk take.
But everybody else had normal proportions. It's just lazy, dude. It's just lazy. Okay, so you saw it in a comic. They just ripped it off from the comic.
Yeah,
like,
how dare
consistency.
They? How dare they pick something from the comics? What are they shooting for here?
A shitty animated movie.
Yeah, how dare they? I don't get this. You're really, really pissing me off right now. We're talking about how...
Well, then that's some success.
Is that your motive here to piss me off?
Listen, I just want to win this feud, you know?
You're not and winning this feud. You're making a fool of yourself. You're commenting on how unproportionate or disproportionate Wilson Fisk
body is. No, I'm just talking about certain nitpicks that add up. Yes, Wilson Fisk is one of them. Stupid things. I'm sure Miles Morales has some invisibility power in the comics. But that doesn't mean you jam it into a wide-release $100 million movie.
Wait,
why
not? If that's his power, then why not?
Because it's too much.
What do you expect him to do otherwise?
It just seemed like a gimmick used for what I think was the lamest scene in the movie is when he's glitching invisible at the Otto Octavius. Not Otto. What's the name of this movie?
Let's just call it
Doc Ock, female Doc Ock, her office. Like, it's like a sitcom scene. It's like a scene from Kung Fu Hustle, except in a Sony Spider-Man release.
I actually love that scene. When they're trying to steal the desktop computer?
Yeah.
I think that scene was hilarious.
Oh my god, you're like 10. You're 10 years old.
They throw, Jake Johnson's character throws a bagel at some dude, and as soon as the bagel hits his head, the screen pops bagel.
Yeah, I know.
That's hilarious.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's a gag that should be in, this is like an SNL sketch of a Spider-Man movie. That's basically what's happening.
With like, okay, for the comedy part of it, sure, I'll grant you that. But with like amazing animation.
SNL sketches aren't usually funny. So
some of them are. I would like to think so.
Yeah, not this one.
This is one of them. No, yeah. In my head, this is the funnier SNL sketch with amazing animation on top of it.
This is like Kenan Thompson coming up with this idea that, oh my God, we'll throw this bagel and then it'll say bagel. And then it'll be so funny. Or like, oh my God, like Kristen Wiig will just like, her hair will get stuck in Spider-Man's hand. And then they'll do this sitcom-y thing. And then like eventually when Spider-Man lets go, there won't be any hair. Because, you know, his fingers are sticky. So why don't we just like take that concept and go crazy?
That sounds like an amazing sketch, by the way.
You're the worst.
You know, another thing that was amazing about this movie was the music and the soundtrack and the score. Everything is so good. Like, everyone loves the soundtrack of this movie because it's really popular songs. I don't know if you personally like those songs or not. I do. They're like very hip-hop, very R&B, and very current, you know. So, you know, I'm always current. But the score of this movie, dude, the score, Daniel Pemberton, who's the musical director of this movie, The themes that he assigns to these specific characters, whenever Prowler comes on screen, for example, the theme that pops up is amazing. It's so gripping that it just makes you like tense and nervous all of a sudden. And then when it's Spider-Man, it's nice and flowy. I love the way he did it in this movie.
Can I just make a confession here, Vikram?
Confession?
I promise you, I'm not saying this in the service of this feud at all. This is a true opinion. I've now watched this movie twice.
Mm-hmm.
I never noticed the score of this movie.
Really? Like, Prowler coming up, you would never think about, or that would never stand out to you?
Every time Prowler came up, all I could think about was how stupid his girl advice was, like that whole hey thing. I'm not even bothering with those nitpicks.
I'm not talking about Uncle Aaron, I'm talking about Prowler. When Prowler comes on screen.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot about the distinction about this multidimensional.
And it's a very clear distinction. And the fact that you didn't notice it, I don't know what that says about you.
I'm just saying, like, it wasn't noticeable. So I'm indifferent. I'll take your word for it. How about that?
I think everyone who worked in this movie did a fantastic job, man. The music and the score was so good. Daniel Pemberton did such a good job there.
Dude, I didn't even notice it. That's a bad sign.
That's a bad sign for you.
For the movie.
No, it's a really bad sign for you because the music was very distinct. So I don't even want to get into that anymore after you said that. But even like Phil Lord and Chris Miller, right? They were the brains behind this movie. They were the producers.
Oh, yeah. That reminds me. Lego Movie did it better.
Okay. Good job.
Thanks.
good job there.
Unfinished solo movie.
Uh-huh.
Completed by Ron Howard.
Uh-huh.
Did the Phil and Lord Miller part better. I don't know what I'm saying anymore.
Yeah, I know. You should just pause, man.
Lego Movie did it better.
Okay, yeah, we heard that with her. And Phil Lord, who actually wrote this movie as well, I think these guys did a pretty good job because these guys had the vision in terms of what the animation should be, what the look and feel of the movie could be. And then the movie ended up having three directors. I think it was like their debuts, all three of them.
Dude, that explains so much.
Oh, really?
The fact that there were three,
mm-hmm.
Hodgepodging. The animation, the storytelling, and the fact that it was their debut, just like not having any idea how to navigate the hodgepodge
creating. They've been in the industry, they've done a bunch of stuff before this, but this was their directorial debut.
Hodgepodge.
Okay. I think everyone did a pretty kick-ass job, man.
No, honestly, like with the direction, there are certain crutches that they use in this movie that are actually not as sure-handed as maybe a very experienced director would have, that like Pixar movies have these days, because at least they've had the maximum like direction experience with animation. For instance, like the movie opens with a bunch of exposition narration. I'm like, okay, animated movie, it's fine, kids movie. And then, kind of weak, every time they use exposition and narration to introduce different Spider-Man, like the story doesn't become organic at all. They keep switching to like voiceovers. That's a crutch. Yes, they dress it up. Yes, they have a slightly different time square every time they show a different universe. But haven't you seen Charlie Kaufman's adaptation? Any movie that uses narration and voiceover is weak.
I think he meant live action movie when he said that.
Why?
Because the whole thing with the animation and the uniqueness of their narration, I think it came together pretty well. It wasn't a straight, so, you know, there was like this time in New York. No.
You're actually doing pretty close to what they're saying.
I am not. And you know it. You can't just force it upon me. It's actually very unique. It's a different voice every time. And then they actually circle back and get it, make it come together really well. The three times they end up doing it in the movie. You're talking about the, okay, let's do it again.
The
you're
different Spider-Man.
Yeah. They actually do it really well. I think, you know, the only concession I would have is Aunt May's basement where all the Spider-Men are accumulated.
The spider suits and the Spider-Man.
No, when all the different Spider-Men are all there from the different multiverses and all, they just come together. I think that scene was the weakest in the movie.
Thanks. They've just been hanging around there. By the way, Gwen Stacy joins Miles Morales' high school before he's bitten by the spider. It literally makes no sense.
No, they clearly mention in her thing that she got transported a week before the original date in her multiverse, in her universe. Yeah.
And then how does she know who Miles Morales is?
Spidey sense.
Oh, Spidey sense. Yeah, Peter Tingle.
Yeah. This is the only time where Spidey sense actually makes sense.
It's not the force, bro. Spidey sense has a very particular use, which is that you can...
Firstly, there's nothing defined about
of
Spidey.
Of course there
no,
is.
No, it's just a sixth sense. There's nothing defined about the sixth sense.
No, it's not. It's impending attacks. It's not the force. The force will lead the way and connect the good side and dark side.
It's not only impending attacks. What are you talking about?
No, are you literally positing that there's the force. That's like a Spidey force.
I'm not saying anything about the force. I'm saying the Spidey sense is more than just impending attacks.
It's not,
a Spidey sense.
No, it's not.
It's Aunt May is going to walk into my room and I'm wearing a spider suit. It's not like Aunt May is coming with a machete trying to chop my head off, right?
Okay,
a Spidey sense. It's just a Spidey sense. Something's up.
That's an impending
attack. And they actually, sorry to cut you off again, they actually clearly established this Spidey sense in this movie where Jake Johnson's character meets Miles Morales. So he knows that there's something, there was Chris Pine Spider-Man and they met. So they actually show how Spidey sense works in this situation. So impending attacks does not make sense.
Firstly, you cut me off.
I know, thrice.
I was just about to say.
Sorry.
Aunt May walking into your room is an impending attack on privacy,
which
in this day and age is even more important than physical attacks.
Explained then. That point has been explained by you.
# Cambridge Analytica. Listen, I think we're going in circles just like this movie's narrative does.
No.
I just have one summary. So I'm going to offer you the floor first and I would like request for the last word.
No.
Please.
Denied.
I insist.
Denied.
I insist.
No, I know it's just going to be something that tilts me even more, so I deny it.
No,
please just go.
It's going to be three words. Are you forfeiting your summary then?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I'll just do it after yours.
No. You won't have the opportunity to. I'll involve you. Let's make this a dynamic
summary.
All
right, let's do it.
I want to summarize this movie by talking about its biggest mistake.
What you think its biggest mistake is? Let's rephrase that.
TMS.
TMS.
Want to take a guess?
Nope.
Too much Spider-Man.
Oh, God.
And that wraps up this episode of Film Feud. Thank you for listening. Now we feuded, and you, our listeners, get to decide who you think won the feud.
You can find us and vote for us on all social media at Muncha Movies. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or our website. Or our website, munchamovies.com.
You can also find us on YouTube and vote for us there. You can find us on everywhere you listen to podcasts like Stitcher, CastBox, Apple Podcasts, etc. Until next time.
Bye-bye.